is Bob Sorrentino from Italian Roots and Genealogy, and be sure to check us out on our blog and YouTube and Facebook page. And great sponsors, Your Dolce Vita, Italy Rooting, and Abitivo Casa. And today we have, I think, only my second guest from Canada, Antonio D'Alfonso. So welcome, Antonio. Thanks for being here.
Hi, it's D'Alfonso.
D'Alfonso. Yeah, see, my Italian is horrible.
No, it's D'Alfonso. It's normal. But I always wonder why they call it D'Alfonso. You're not the first one, D'Alfonso.
It's probably a New York thing.
No, I hear it all the time, but I don't understand. It's an apostrophe, not a period.
Well, you know what's interesting? When we were in Italy, here I say my name Sorrentino, right? But in Italy, you know, they roll the R's. It's Sorrentino, you know?
Ecco, sì, Sorrentino.
It's funny. So, you know, I know you've written a couple of books, and I want to talk about that. But before we do, when did your family arrive in Canada?
So, my father came in 52. However, his grandfather lived in the States. It must have been, because I have a picture taken in the States. It must have been in the 1870s, 1880s. And on my mother's side, my grandfather came here in 1913 with $25. But he left. They had to go back for the war, right? Mm-hmm. For the Italian War, because they would have been considered draft dodgers. So they either became citizens or became enemies. So they left and went to do war, went to destroy each other. And so they came. My father came in 52, and then after his military service, and then he invited his girlfriend, my mother, in 50. No, he came 51. She came in 52.
And then I was born. Yeah, and so what's interesting about that is that my uncle, when my grandparents came, he was left behind as a young child, 4 or 5 years old, with his grandparents, and so he didn't come. He had to, you know, like you said, he had to be in the service over there, and then he got caught up in World War II, so he didn't come until. He left Italy in 1949 by himself, and he went to Toronto because he couldn't come to America.
That's right. He couldn't. That's right. You're right. So how did he sneak in?
Well, he didn't. He was able to apply. He came by himself. He worked on a mushroom farm someplace near Toronto. I don't know exactly where. But he eventually sent for his family, and they came, and they spent I think close to 5 years. They were in Canada before they could come. Even though his four brothers all served in the U.S. Army, it didn't matter. He still had to wait with his family to come across. Mm-hmm. But my cousin, his oldest daughter, came when she was 18 to Canada. And my uncle, my mother's brother-in-law, smuggled her in over the bridge under the seat of the car.
Amazing.
And then she met her husband in America, and they had to smuggle her back so she could come back legally and marry him.
Amazing. Yeah, this is, yeah, I imagine, because you were not allowed to go in. Yes.
So now your family, you said one part of your family originally came to the States. That was very, very early on for Italian American, for Italians to come to the States.
Yeah. I don't know why they, well, I know that this must be about sponsorship, right? I mean, I know that they, we're Abruzzese, right? We're from the Abruzzi region. So those people got located, there's a city just outside of Philadelphia. So that's a big center of Abruzzese, and Montreal. So they came to Montreal. I moved into Toronto later on in 1990, because Toronto is Calabrese. It's not Abruzzese. So I imagine people really just went where other people like them lived, you know? And so he probably ended up going to work in the States somewhere. Then he went back. That I know that he went back because, yes, Kanshokan.
I've heard it. Yeah, I know what you mean.
It's near Swedenland and Lafayette Hill, Villanova. So that is I was told it's a big center of Abruzzese people.
Now my family, my mom's family is Barese, and there was a lot of Barese in around Toronto. And my uncle went back there. I guess it must have been in the late 60s, early 70s. He went with my aunt, and he was treated like royalty, because my grandmother, unbeknownst to him, was sending money to Italy to bring people over to Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't it's not like they had a lot of money, but whatever she could send, she would send.
That's right. Yes. Absolutely. Yes.
So I've been to Montreal. I've been to Toronto. I drove through Toronto, actually. But we don't, at least, you know, most Italian Americans, we don't associate Montreal with Italians. We associate it with French.
Yeah. Yes. You're right. Yes. You see, I write about this in this book, Italian Canadian American writer, the Italian Canadian writer, and I talk about that issue. It's a big issue because my generation, post-war, the baby boomers, we went to English schools, Catholic English schools, so we became Anglophone. And those who went to French schools, like my cousins, they speak French. They don't identify at all with the English side. And they don't even really identify with the Italian side in many ways. It was, I definitely had a say in this, I don't mean to be pretentious, but in the 70s when I started publishing and writing, because I started a press in Montreal to help Italians in Montreal. And so I was part of that awakening, and which became a problem because in Quebec, Montreal, at the same time, they were becoming very conscious of who they wanted to be and separate from the rest of Canada, which, you know, and that created a problem with the Italian English community. But that reality is dead now. And because of the laws, what I'm talking about no longer exists. Mm. With my generation. And so that's one of the reasons why I left for Toronto, because I, you know, you either embrace that reality of becoming French or you don't. I mean, it's a political, it doesn't matter what I think, or we might be against it or not against it. That's a different issue. But if you don't embrace it, then there's no reason to stay, because it's not part of the future. And all of a sudden you end up being really secluded, and there is no outlet for people like me anymore in Quebec.
Yeah, and that's so foreign to us Americans, you know, that kind of concept.
Yeah, well, you know, I understand it's foreign to American reality, because there is no ethnic group, if I may say that, that declares that they control a territory, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
And that's what the French Canadians of Quebec are saying, that this belongs to us and we don't want you here. That's a very tough idea. And like I said, whether you want to embrace it or not, that's another issue. So Well, how do you do, what do you do with that, right? I mean,
So I have to ask you now, you said you had cousins that went to French schools and learned French. Well, how did they wind up? Was it just their parents decided, well, they wanted to be part and they went to the French schools or?
No, on the contrary, what you're saying is a very important question, because in 1950, there was a extreme right-wing prime minister who actually said, we don't want the Italians to come to the Catholic French school board.
Really?
They actually prevented us from going.
Wow.
I don't know how my cousins ended up going. It's basically out of laziness, because there was a school right there. And they said, we want to go there. And they fought for it. They said, we want to go there because I don't want my kid to go to 5 kilometers, you know, to go study at elementary. And that's what I did. Every morning, I would take the bus by myself and I'll pay 6 cents in bus fare and go downtown Montreal. And I was the only Anglophone of my family in many ways. It is a later immigration in the 60s. Immigration into Quebec ends in 68, 69, Italian immigration. From then on, it becomes primarily Francophone. So anybody who wants to come into Quebec, you have to have French as a viable idiom, or else you don't make it in. So we're really the last of a bastion. And it was through the Catholic schools that we were able to create this buffer zone. But we're very unique. And like I said, it's a very limited in time phenomenon. I mean, it's a lot. It's 70 years. But still, it'll never happen again. It never happened before. It won't happen again. It's just, we're very unique, you know, because normally an Anglophone, English-speaking person, would go to a Protestant school board. That is where the Greeks went, the Portuguese, the Jewish people, if they didn't go to their own schools, right? They would go to a Protestant school board, whereas we went to a Catholic primarily. Our schools were 99% Italians.
Wow.
We spoke English, and in Latin, they would teach us Italian. You know, illegally teach us Italian, or we'd go on Saturday classes. So that's how we speak. That's why we speak. That's another phenomenon. We who went to English schools speak Italian.
That's great. So, I wish they taught me, you know.
But here in Toronto, you have the same phenomenon where those who went to public schools don't speak Italian. Those who went to Catholic schools speak Italian. I don't know why this Catholicism became a source of Italian language, because we didn't speak Italian. We spoke our dialects, right? All our different languages, right? And these dialects are not badly spoken Tuscan. We're totally different. Like Barese is a totally different language, right? It's Greek, right? It's you know, it's heavily influenced by Greek. And where we come from, it's heavily influenced by Albanian and Serbo-Croat, which are official languages from the Abruzzi region. So we grew up multilingual. In my family, I mean, I heard at least 7 languages on a daily basis, like 4 or 5 Italian languages, heard French and English.
Yeah, you know, I have a friend, a good friend who, he's Armenian. He grew up in Beirut, and because of that, he speaks French because they had taught it in school. He had to speak Arabic because that's what the stores were. He speaks Armenian because that's what his parents spoke. And it's just so great that he's able to, you know, converse in all of these different languages. And of course, English, because he moved here when he was 18. But you know, that's the one thing that I say here, you know, us Italians from my generation or our children and children's children and so on, they don't hear the Italian language anymore, you know, like I did growing up.
We'll be right back.
Italian Roots and Genealogy is proudly sponsored by Your Dolce Vita and Dawn Matera, connecting people to their purpose in life and continuing their legacy. For more information, contact Dawn at www.yourdolcevita.com.
Yes, I had to learn it. I mean, my parents, it was forbidden to speak Italian at home. We had to speak our dialect. Mm. My father was really adamant. I mean, he was very anti-nationalist and very anti-fascist. And he did not want Italian to be spoken. And when he would speak with his friends, he would speak his dialect. And he learned the dialects about Sicilians. He would learn the dialects. He wanted to hear that voice, those voices which were not from the official Italian voice, right? So I had to learn. At the age of 32, I went to the institute and learned the language, the Tuscan language.
Right, yeah.
Right, the Tuscan language. And but I still, when I speak Italian, I am not shy of introducing my dialect. I will not bow away from it. I don't feel and it being an embarrassment if I say sh instead of c, you know, that s with that sh sound, which is so beautiful. I mean, it you know, especially when you listen to love songs in Neapolitan, why would you lose that language? You see, I mean, the generation like Dean Martin and Luigi Prima. You know, those people heard the dialect at home, right? And so even though they didn't sing proper Italian, but it was like you heard, they heard it. They knew something was going on with that language, you know. And in the States, you don't have to identify to the language, right? You created another reality.
Yeah. Well, you know, growing up, I heard Barese mostly because we were my mom's family. My father's from Naples. But I thought that was Italian because
it is Italian.
Well, yeah, it's probably pure Italian, right? But it was only later on that I said, wait a second, this is a different language. And we were just there in September. Our driver was, when we went to my mom's hometown in Torito, he was saying, you know, he would say something in Italian, then he would tell me in Barese, and it was completely different. Not even close.
It's a different language.
Yeah, completely. So now have you gone back to the hometowns at all?
Yes, of course. I went back. Until COVID, I would go at least once a year not to the region, because my father fell in love with Udine, which is the northern part near Venice. That's where he went to do his military service. And strangely enough, how life goes full circle. Most of the universities that are interested by my work are at the Udine University. So I go there and I love it up there. You know, you know, you have Venice, you have Trieste. I mean, this is Middle Europe, right? This is where all the great minds come from. Mm-hmm. And you feel there's an amazing feeling of a variety of cultures. I really like that. You know, I don't mean to speak badly about the village where my parents were born, but the truth of the matter is they were immigrants as well. I did DNA testing, and first of all, my grandparents don't come from that village. They always moved. You see, that's another thing we seem to forget. Italians always moved, because if there were serfs, well, I'm using that word purposely, working on land, they had to, every time the land, they would have this acreage silent for a season, they would move to the next acreage. And that's how they moved across the country. You know, they were not city people. They were people working vegetables and fruit. We were not a family of animal shepherds. You know, mm-hmm. We were basically olive growers, figs. You know, my mother's family name was Salvatore Tanna, but they were known as the gardeners. You know, they literally, that's how they were known, all the way to Vasto. So I never felt, I mean, I wrote a lot about it became a source of inspiration, the village, Guglionesi, which is near Termoli. But I identify with the experience of immigration, I believe. I like the idea of people moving and not being fixed. I like that fluidity. Mm-hmm. It's something that I could say this now. I wasn't aware of this as I became Italic, right? I mean, one becomes this. It's not something that you have to learn. Identity is something you learn. You're not born with it. Now, like you're yourself. You're from Naples. So in body, you have two different realities. Sure, there's a Greek link because it's part of Magna Graecia, but it's still very, one is the Adriatic and the other one's the other place.
Completely right? Different. I
totally
mean,
different, right?
Completely
so
different.
So you're a synthesis, right? You're a synthesis of two different realities. You had to re-identify. You had to find an identity, right? I mean, it's complex. It's not that, you know, language is just a tool. All dealing with identity is so complex that it doesn't matter what language I speak. I still gonna have to deal with this, you know, these two realities. And I think that's what the Italians makes that. I think this is the element that it makes Italians interesting as a people outside of Italy, because they raise issues that have never been really raised before. You know, how do we identify ourselves?
Yeah.
How to identify ourselves? We're very different from the Jewish people who have the Torah. We don't have anything that unites us. We don't even have a common language. If you spoke Barese and I spoke my dialect, we wouldn't even understand each other, right?
My parents used to fight all the time over who was speaking the proper language.
So language is not a common thing. Religion isn't. Territory isn't.
Well, so, you know, and it's and you know, and it's a young country. I mean, really, you know.
Yeah, 67.
Yeah, yeah.
1867. You know, it's very young, and they're having a lot of problems. It's no different than the Balkan states. You know that Yugoslavia. It's the same thing in Italy. Just, I think that land ownership was a major element in that creating this country. You know,
well, yeah, and that all kind of fell apart. I mean, my dad's mom comes from two noble families, and so you know, when I see their records, some of them, the birth records says that, you know, the father was a rich person, that was his occupation, and some say property owner. To your point,
I said yeah,
and. You know, they, and I didn't know this until recently, that in southern Italy, the nobles all lived in Naples. They only went to the towns or their lands maybe once, maybe twice a year, and that was it. The rest of the time they spent in Naples. So, you know, I have roots in Molise and Calabria and, you know, a bunch of different regions because of where they own this land.
Yes, Molise, that's what we are called. But Molise is a recent invention, 1964.
Yes, right.
I call it Abruzzo because I don't see why they divided it. They divided because it was an enormous territory with no money. They would have had to give a lot of taxes. So they said, forget it. Let's divide this stuff, you know. But it's a pity because we're Molisani, but my parents were Abruzzese, they came from Vasto, Lanciano, they came from Pescara.
Yeah, well, I have, one of the families were the Dukes of Capricotta, which is, you know, it's a ski resort now, but what a beautiful place. And, you know, people don't understand what their hometowns the churches are beautiful, the streets are clean, the people are just, you know, I see pictures of them every year. I guess they have a, it's not really a feast, it looks like almost like a block party, but it's the whole friggin' town, you know.
Yeah, but you know, I would ask my, they lived 15 kilometers from the Adriatic. I would ask my parents, would you go to the beach? Well, we never went. We didn't have time. We had to work the land, they would say. So the idea of Italy being a beautiful place is a recent phenomena. I think it's a post-boom 70s, 80s. I think it's the 80s that, from then on, because Italy was destroyed by the war. I mean, I remember when I went for the first time in 73, it still smelled war. There were buildings that were bombarded. You know, it was really destroyed. You know, it was not very, lively, you know.
Yeah, well, I just interviewed Dominic Candeloro, who's grew up, he's a little bit older than us, and you know, he
just published a book, right?
Yes. And he said he, you know, he remembers the family sending their old shoes and old clothes to Italy because it was war torn. That's what the that's, you know, and he said he couldn't relate to it, you know.
No, we can't. And now you know, you asked me about, you know, going to Italy. I feel, you know, Italy is such an aristocratic country. It's like France. I mean, I mean, these are countries where one wonders, how did my parents live there? Honestly, I mean, it is so expensive. It is, I mean, in America, we have the middle class. There is no such thing as a middle class in Italy. You really feel poverty and richness. And it is amazing. And then you have this, the idea of rural versus urban realities. So
But you know that, but the people are happy.
I don't know. I honestly cannot say that.
I felt that way.
Pardon? Excuse me.
No, I said I felt that way, that the people were happy, but maybe they were just happy to see somebody from America. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
But you know, to your point, it's you know, much different than here. But I'll be honest with you. One of the things that I feel, I've traveled a lot because I work for a bank. People think that we have everything here. And that's not necessarily true.
True.
You know what I mean?
I agree with you. Yes. I agree with you. But I like America. I mean, when I say North and South America, I mean, what we call these two continents. America has something that is very unique, which has nothing, which Europe does not have. Europe is really territorial. You know, we began Varese, Abruzzo, Naples, Udine, like there are these city states. Mm-hmm. America has no city states. Forget about Quebec. You know, Quebec is the exception. So that idea of not coming from that place is so liberating. You know, you asked me about the village. I felt claustrophobic. I mean, I loved it. It's beautiful. You know, I mean, the food is, I taste it. I hear less and less my dialect, you know, the dialect I grew up with. But I remember when I would go there and I hear the dialect, I was, it was paradise, right? There was something about it, very maternal about it. And another level, I was scared of walking the street because they all said, there he is. He's the son of this guy, you know? And now there's no son of anybody. Who's this? What's he doing here? You know? Who is he? Why is he coming here? You know, is he from the government, right? It's too small. It's claustrophobic. And you can't, you know, it's a small village. It's a small town, right? And these small towns are emptying.
I know.
Yeah. Right? I mean, it is. So Italy has become, again, city-state minded. You know, Rome, Milano, Genova, you have these big cities, and inside you have these beautiful country homes that are being bought by people from the city back, like what you were saying, Naples, and they would go to the village, get the money from the serfs. And I think that's what's that is what is happening. When you meet people who have vineyards, you know, there are people from the old time. Like I met in France, I met this man who has a vineyard, and his family had it since 1700, pre-revolution, French Revolution, which is amazing, you know. He had never moved since 1700. He had never moved from the place. I mean, I find that very strange in many ways. I mean, you know, I find that very strange to not want to move out.
Yeah, and you know what kind of, I don't know if bothers is the right word, but you know, we know so much about the history of France and you know, England and Germany and the royal families there or noble families there and how they lived. Very little of that is published about Italy, you know, at least not in English anyway.
I totally agree. No, I totally agree with you. You know, I was thinking about this interview, and I have to say this. I just discovered Ancestry, so I went there and I tried, but you can't find anything in Italy. It's because it's against the law, DNA. In France, it's against the law. DNA is illegal. So there's a film on Netflix. I don't want to do promotion, but this is where I learned. I had heard about this before. So the police caught a serial killer. They had his DNA. They could not use DNA to convict him. I couldn't believe it. I mean, they let him go. And he continued killing. And so the idea of not revealing DNA says a lot about a society. They have something to hide. I think that's why we can't find anything about Italy. And I discovered through DNA that, oh, I'm not from what I'm not who I thought I was.
Yes,
you know, you asked me, I'm Italian. I just discovered I'm more Italian than my parents were. Mm-hmm. My parents are not Italian. They were from other regions. They're Bulgarian. They're from Greece. They're from Scotland. My father has Scottish and Welsh blood. I never knew that. You know, they don't want us to know what happened 100 years ago.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny you say that, because I every once in a while I see somebody who's like, I'm not doing DNA because I'm 100% Italian. And I say there's no such thing as 100% Italian. Exactly. It doesn't exist. and your culture and your genetics are two different things.
Absolutely. This is very important, Bob, what you're saying. It is fundamental. You know, so going back to what you're saying about our kids don't want to learn Italian, they'll learn. I mean, my daughter learned. I would speak to her in my dialect. She learned a couple of dialects and she speaks it. She would learn it right away with it if she went out with an Italian guy, you know. It's just she prefers speaking, I don't know, Spanish or whatever, because her boyfriend is Spanish, right? I mean, Spanish speaking. I mean, that's the other thing. I mean, you learn the other language that will be useful for you, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly. So I want to talk about the book, the one that you held up was the title, the
Italian-Canadian.
Italian-Canadian. I wasn't sure if it was Canadian, Italian, Italian-Canadian.
Yes, because I played with that.
But I mean, what's the premise behind the, what is an Italian-Canadian writer?
So in fact, this was commissioned by an American Italian, Anthony Tamburi, who commissioned this from New York. And they said, we have to do it in Italian. So I wrote this in Italian. So when I wrote it in Italian, it was interesting because it was with the Italian point of view. All right. So the question is, what is an Italian American? What is an Italian Canadian? Does it really exist? I mean, that's right. What is an Italian? So I had to ask every question so that we didn't fall into what you just said, genetics equals culture. I had to break that. And so what I did is an overview of when it began, writing. You know, what is a writer, first of all? Yeah, I mean, it's a stupid question, but I mean, a lot of people, if you look at Kafka, a lot of writers, Rimbaud, they never published in a lifetime, right? Mm. They became famous post-mortem. And so I have to say, there are probably major writers right now who are not publishing, who will probably change our definition of what it means to be Italian-Canadian. And so I had to raise that issue. So whatever I come up with as a definition, it has to be temporary. And I think there are about five definitions. One would be an Italian person who's still Italian, who's legally still Italian, who writes in Italian or English, but he still considers himself Italian. I mean, the fact that he is living abroad is nothing. His tradition goes back to Italy. Then you have the Italian French, the French Canadian. He doesn't care about being Italian Canadian, so he will become French, francophone, and the Italian will become a distant element, a detail. On the English side, you have a big presence of people who write in English who don't care about that ethnic thing. They don't care about the Italian thing at all. They embrace the British or the American Anglo-Saxon reality. They are writing in English and they go towards that. They want to be part of that reality. Then you have the same type of writer, but only the Italian thing is important. Now, in that importance of Italianness, there are two roads, maybe three roads. The ones that come to mind is nostalgia, the idea of something that was beautiful or not beautiful, doesn't matter, or something that has to be defined. And that's where I got in. I wanted to talk about that new identity, which I call the Italic, which is not defined by the past. It's not defined by territory, not defined by language. It's not defined by politics in many ways. It's a cultural. I mean, when I was a student, the people who taught me Italian culture were not even Italian. I mean, they spoke better than my parents ever spoke Italian. I mean, why would they not be Italian? Right? So, I mean, they knew the culture inside out. I mean, they knew all the great writers. They could recite Dante. They could recite Pasolini. I mean, they were German. So all of a sudden you say, well, how come I want to include these people in my definition of being Italic? So Italic would be this cross-border reality of a culture, like a spacecraft, in fact. And I think that is basically what I mean, what I discovered in doing this book, that we want to be part of the spacecraft called Italic, and that you want to make this conscious step towards it. It is a new phenomenon, which I think other ethnics will go through as well. As because what is, going back to America, what will happen in the future is we will receive more and more immigrants, whether it's political or not. We're going to be receiving these new cultures, and they're not going to want to identify to British culture or to France. They might want to identify to Indonesia. You know, they might not need any desire to they want to be part of the city, but they have no desire to totally lose themselves. No, they do it for religion. We can do it for religion. Why can't we do it for culture? We do it for money. Money does it. Money is transcultural, transnational, right? I mean, nobody says, oh, I don't want that money. It doesn't matter where it comes from, right? I think that's what culture will be in the future. So that's what I discovered, that the Italian immigrant, our generation, those born abroad, who asks that person who asks these questions will not disappear. There are going to be more and more of us. And it is important to say, to repeat what you said, Bob. It is not genetic.
Right.
Culture is not genetic. It might have been, but it must not be that. It must not also be territorial, because look at yourself, Barese and Neapolitan, and yet you are someone. What you are, your parents were not, and you have to define. And that definition, you're passing on to your friends, your children, your loved ones. I mean, you are offering this new identity, which has no name, right? Sure, I'm from New Jersey, but that is an accident. You know, tomorrow you might go to California. Tomorrow you might go to Paris. You're not going to change. In the old days, they had to, because they had laws against them. They had these incredible racist laws against Italians in France, you know, and across the world, across the states, they had the laws, you know, against Italians. Hopefully, racism, that's an awful, cultural intolerance or religious intolerance or whatever they call skin intolerance. I don't understand the word race. So, but that reality will hopefully disappear. You know, unfortunately, we're back into it. You know, the world has just collapsed with this territorial.
Yeah, war. You know, I know what you mean. I don't know if that's human nature ingrained.
I don't think it is human nature. You have to be I'm optimistic. I don't think it is human. I think we've been brainwashed to believe that I am genetically a Catholic. What do you mean? What is that supposed to mean, right? Right? You know, I remember the first time I met an Italian Jewish person. I was, really? You're Italian? Yeah, I'm from Calabria. You know? Or I was married to a Calvinist Italian from Calabria. I mean, I had no idea. I mean, as an older man, I mean, I was in my 20s, 30s. And all of a sudden, I'm totally stupid. I'm ignorant.
Well, you know, I interviewed a Jewish guy from Italy. And, you know, he's early 30s now. He didn't know he was Jewish until he was in his 20s. I didn't tell him, you know, and that's sad. But, you know, going back to what you said about where you're from, and I forget who it was that gave the example. If somebody asks you, where are you from? Do I say I'm from New Jersey because I'm here now? I was born in New York. Do I say I'm from New York? Do I say I'm from Italy? You know, so it's a subjective thing, I guess, as to when somebody asks you that question, how you answer that.
I answered once for the government. I wrote Italian Canadian and they wrote back, it doesn't exist. You see, that's where this came from. When a government told me that I did not exist, wow, that was a shock.
Well, you know, growing up, if somebody asked me what I was, I was instinctively Italian.
Yes.
You know, we're talking the 50s, early 60s, we're Italian, you know, and then it gets to Italian American, and they asked me in Italy, how do you feel about do you feel Italian, right? And I said, when I'm here, yes, until somebody asks me a question in Italian and I can't answer it, and they got a big kick out of that. I said, then I'm American when somebody does that.
Doesn't matter, because if they spoke English, you would be able to express yourself, right?
But you know, you get by. We pointed a
Of
lot. You know,
course,
you're
get
able to,
by.
you get through. You get through everything.
But it's true. In the 50s, I remember when we'd go to, we'd drive down every weekend to Wildwood and Atlantic City. My
Oh,
father.
I'm not far from there. I'm
Yeah,
like.
I know. And we would go and swim, and you had this incredible beach. So we would go there, and I would meet, I mean, my dream was to meet an Italian American woman, right? We're kids, right? 12, 13 years old. And I would meet these girls, and they would say, "Oh, yeah, we're Italian. I'm from New Jersey." Crazy, right? I was like, "Oh, cool." I didn't understand what it meant, though. I just felt there's a link that was established when they would say they're Italian. And clearly, we're both not Italian. We were from America and Canada or whatever it is. And that time, a link existed when I met Italian German as an intellectual or Italian Argentinian. When the people would say, "I'm from Australia, but I'm Italian. My mother's Italian, but my father has this Scottish name, but I'm Italian." And that was another discovery. So all of this coming out, I call it this coming out, is a very new process. It's a post-80, I think. I think the World Cup in football and soccer really awakened something for the first time with the Italian peoples. There was something that occurred, which is very, I think that is a turning point. It was a turning point for me as a young man in 82. I mean, none of us brought our Italian flags, but we went and walked. We were coming out, right? It was like, you know, it was exactly like coming out as a gay man, or, you know, it was like really coming out. I was shy walking on the streets saying, "I'm a WOP, I'm Italian, I'm a Dago." That was what I'm saying, you know, je suis un Rital. And in French, it's Rital. It's wow, it was like a very radical moment for all of us. And I realized that we found this in other cities and other places across the world. So we had to define this emotion. And one of the first things you had to do was to go back what you're saying. Genetics does not equal culture. I don't have to be a nationalist to be Italian. I could be whatever I want. I'll define it. Let me take my time and define it. And I think all the writers that I publish of Italian background or origin or whatever you want to call these Italic writers I published in the past 50 years, they're all asking the same question. You know, they're asking questions, they're coming up with songs, with feelings that express a sentiment that has not a clear definition, but there's something, a happiness there, you know. I think Dean Martin expressed it very well. I love Dean Martin. Dean Martin was our favorite singer at home. You know, he was Abruzzese, so my father was able to catch the dialect. You know, when he would say "That's amore," my father would say, "Ah, that, you see, he's American, but there's something else going on." And you know, but he that 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 pride, that proud feeling, that you know, not a pureness. It's just a good feeling. You know, it's a good someone who likes something else, right? It's very complex because you can't really define it, but it
Yeah, no,
exists.
I know what you mean. I know what you mean, yeah.
Very complex. I mean, so that's what I try to do with this book. And I could say, like, these are two books are published. This is my diary in 1980. It's called Outside Looking In, published by Ectasis, both of them. They're part of my autobiography. And in this book, I don't feel at all Italian. So from here to here, that's 50 years apart, something happened. I don't know what it is. Something happened. I met a lot of people like you who are asking questions. We're talking about it. And it's important to say, let's not go here. You know, certain things we must not identify and clearly embrace because it's dangerous. We have history behind us that teaches us, don't go there.
And you know, and I think too, for me, it's also, you know, finding out about Italy, or at least, you know, my family there, in some ways helps me define myself. I can't explain it, but that's the way I feel, if you know what I mean.
And you're from aristocracy, which is cool. You know, do you have any links with them?
Oh, tons.
Really? Cool.
Whenever anybody asks, if you could talk to anybody in the past, who would it be? And I was like, my grandmother. I want to talk to my grandmother.
Yeah. I don't know who I would want to talk to. Great-grandparents just before. Yeah, great-great-grandparents.
Yeah.
Before the World Wars, right? I mean, the World Wars destroyed so much.
You know, sometimes we'll watch, you know, these period movies. Like, you know, they're remaking The Leopard in Sicily, by the way.
Oh, really?
I think it's Netflix. I can't wait. That's going to be fabulous. But, you know, we'll watch these period movies and my wife will say, wouldn't it be nice to be able to, like, just drop in to that period and look down and see how people really lived and you know, what went through their minds and things like that. You know, we get a little bit of a sense of it, but you can't really see the whole reality. And it's like visiting a place or living there. We lived in England for 2 years, completely different than visiting, right?
Absolutely. You know, I mean, you have to go pay your taxes. You have to wait in line, you know,
get your television license. And
oh my God. Yeah. Paying the electricity bill. It's really complex.
You know, when I opened up the bank account in England, they said to me, do you want crossed or uncrossed checks? And I was like, I haven't. What are you talking about?
Yeah, right. What
does that mean?
What does it mean?
And they explained that. And they get two little slashes through where you wrote the name. And it meant that, if I remember correctly, either meant that only that person could cash the check, or something like that. You know, you couldn't like, I guess, co-sign it over to somebody else or something like that. I don't remember exactly. Like I said, it's a completely different experience when you have to live someplace else, you know.
Did you meet Italians when you were in England?
I met only a couple. Now, I have a good friend that I work with in New York, and his mom was an Italian war bride in England. His father was a British soldier, and he met his wife in Italy and eventually brought her over to England. And, you know, Italians in England, they have a long history going back to before the war. And a lot of them, for some strange reason, were in the ice cream industry.
Yeah. Yes.
Like the Barese in New York were icemen for some strange reason. Don't know why. Don't know why. So Antonio, anybody who wants to find your book or, you know, get in touch with you, how would they do that?
Well, you can write to me, Antonio D'Alfonso at simpatico.ca. One word, or else the books, Amazon. This is Ecstasis Editions. They're in Victoria. We had a launching yesterday, in fact. We had 10 books that I edited. And please. It would be interesting to get feedback. See, writing poetry is one thing. These are essays. You want feedback, you know, and not just good feedback. I mean, if you have to criticize, but feedback that makes the conversation advance, the ideas advance. I think it's important. And you know, I'm getting on, and I wanted to leave something. I mean, I'm writing basically only my, I'm decided to write the autobiographical stuff right now because, like I said, I represent a time in history, in Canadian history, which is going to be dead because of Montreal, that reality I was explaining at the beginning. So I want to keep a record of it so that people like me don't get forgotten, because we're very unique, and it doesn't exist anywhere else in the world, where we were a triangulation of cultures. You know, it's very unique, and at a fluke, this happened. And I want to talk about it. And I think whatever the Italic is can be found in that uniqueness of these triangulation of these meeting of cultures, things that happen at the same time that diverge. There's something there that reminds me of Trieste, in fact, of the Middle Europe, right? There was something at the end of the Austrian Empire, Austrian-Hungarian Empire, that was could have been great. Unfortunately, it became awful. It became World War, right? But I hope we don't have to repeat that. You know,
yeah,
I think we don't need to. You know, the last century was full of that hatred. You know, of territorial mindedness. So sad, you know.
I'm right there with you. I'm right there with you. Well, this has been fascinating. I appreciate you taking the time. I learned a lot more about Canadian history than I knew before.
Thank you.
So I really appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you so much, Bob.